In the most recent decadal survey, planetary scientists advocated for a mission to Enceladus. They want to be able to go down to the surface of Enceladus and observe the geysers that are spraying out from the south pole of this moon at Saturn, the Enceladus Orbilander. But once you're actually down there on the surface of Enceladus, it's a tricky place. You've got this really dangerous terrain. You've got these geysers. You've got the radiation, the lack of atmosphere. It's a hard place to explore with a wheeled rover, with any of the sort of traditional ways. And so one idea for being able to explore the surface of Enceladus is with a jumping robot. My guest today is Dr. Justin Yim. He is an assistant professor of mechanical science and engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And he is a part of the Novel Mobile Robots Lab. And these are a group of people that are working on really interesting robot concepts. And one that they have built is a hopping robot that can jump around on one leg. And of course, when you're on Enceladus and the gravity is 1/80th of what it is on Earth, when you can jump 1 meter, you can jump 80 meters and so on. And so this idea of hopping around actually becomes really interesting. And of course, we're talking about this because Justin and his team have been awarded a NASA NIAC grant phase one to develop this idea further. All right, enjoy this interview with Justin Yim. We've been talking a lot about Enceladus here on the channel, and you know, a lot of my listeners, my audience is very familiar with why to go to Enceladus. Justin, can you give me a sense from an engineering standpoint, just how complicated the surface of Enceladus is likely to be?
Yeah, sure. So Enceladus is this icy moon of Saturn, and one of the challenges is it's super cold. I think the surface is around negative 200 Celsius or so. I'm not a planetary scientist, but as an engineer, I know that's really scary. If we're going to try to build things that are going to survive that temperature, that's difficult. It's also far from the sun, meaning we're not able to use things like solar panels for power. And finally, the surface is going to be covered in ice of various different types. There might be some ice particles that are raining down. There might be icy surfaces that are slippery. And getting over those surfaces is going to be really hard. It also doesn't have an atmosphere, meaning that we can't fly over it by ways like Ingenuity, the helicopter on Mars. So getting around on the surface of Enceladus seems like it's going to be pretty challenging if we can do it.
Yeah. Now, we're talking to you today because you've recently been awarded a NASA NIAC grant phase one to build, or at least to investigate, to consider a landing system for Enceladus to explore, I guess, the Enceladus version of a rover. What are you proposing is a way to get around on the surface of Enceladus?
Sure. So as I mentioned, some of the challenges with Enceladus are it's got a complicated surface, which means that rolling over it might be very challenging for a traditional rover. There are also going to be ridges and valleys and other types of terrain topology, as well as the different types of ice that we might run into. We can't fly because there's no atmosphere. And finally, a lot of what's really interesting about Enceladus is capturing the chemicals and the water that are there, which we don't really want to pollute with things like propellants that might come out of rockets. So with those limitations, my collaborators at JPL and I considered, well, we can't roll very easily, we can't fly with aerodynamic forces, we can't use rockets, what's left? Well, maybe jumping could be a way to go about doing that. And that's what I've been working on for a good while. During my PhD at the University of California, Berkeley, I worked on a little one-legged hopping robot, Salto.
Oh, great.
And we got lots of really cool behaviors here on Earth that were really fun. And Enceladus might be a great opportunity for expanding this locomotion capability to see if it could do a lot better than some of these other alternative locomotion modes with some really cool features. So one of them that's actually kind of nice about Enceladus is it's way smaller than Earth. It's way smaller than the moon. The gravity on Enceladus is about 1/80th as strong as Earth, which means that a robot that can jump 3 feet high on Earth could jump like 200 feet high on Enceladus, meaning you could cover really long distances with each bound. And that's what we're proposing to try to develop. We'd like to see if we can make a small jumping robot that can get over Enceladus, and there's a bunch of things we're going to have to do in order to get there.
So let's talk about sort of like what this thing would actually look like. Now, can you hold up your previous iteration?
Absolutely.
Again? Yeah, okay. So how does that work? And I'll have to apologize to the podcast listeners. We're now looking at a robot, but how does this function as a hopper?
Yeah, sure. So for the podcast listeners, I can also describe some of this. Salto is a small robot, about 100 grams in weight total, and about 6 inches tall when standing on its foot, or 1 foot tall when fully extended. It's got only one leg at the bottom, and it's got a couple of additional appendages. The main important part for jumping is this really powerful single leg. The nice thing about having only one leg is we can concentrate all of the motor power in that single leg to make it really strong. And we did a lot of work on the mechanical design when I was a PhD student to get this to jump really high. It can jump about 4 feet high, and it can also bounce. It bounces essentially like a pogo stick. We have, in addition to the leg, a reaction wheel on the side that spins around to control our pitch angle, so that's our forwards-backwards lean. And we have two little propellers on top that we stole off of one of those, you know, palm-sized quadrotor toys. And those allow us to control the roll angle, that's the left and right tilt, and the yaw heading. So putting that all together, we can fully control the angle of the robot in the air, and if we lean in a certain direction, like a pogo stick, the robot will accelerate that direction when it bounces. So the robot can jump several hundred times in a row. I think the most we did was like 800, 900 jump bounces over the span of 10 minutes, and it can run at about 3 meters per second or so, so it's like 6 or 7 miles an hour. And it can also do some fun maneuvers that other robots that aren't as bouncy can't do, like jumping off of walls in a wall jump maneuver.
Okay, so you've got this prototype on Earth, but I can see you've got propellers. So obviously, you know, you already mentioned there's no atmosphere on Enceladus. What do you propose instead of propellers to sort of keep you upright?
There's a few things that are challenging with trying to get a robot like Salto working. The first one, as you mentioned, no aerodynamic forces. We can't use propellers. So we need an alternative method for doing our attitude control for roll and yaw. And specifically, we thought we might be able to get a couple of different things out of this change. Maybe we could kill two birds with one stone, as the saying goes. The reaction wheel works really well for the pitch control. And so we thought, all right, if we use two angled reaction wheels, we could control both the pitch and the roll at the same time. We decided that two seemed like a pretty good number because while we can control pitch and roll, perhaps we wouldn't be able to control yaw as well. But with the robot jumping around one leg, this is actually sort of an omnidirectional robot. We can jump forwards, left, right, backwards, all equally well, so the angle of the robot's heading doesn't matter so much. As long as we can control roll and pitch, we're in good shape. So two reaction wheels should be the right number for controlling that. And as an additional bonus, if we make these reaction wheels wheel-shaped, like a circle, rather than this kind of stick with two weights at the end as it's currently built, it can also act like a real wheel, which gives us a few benefits. One, it can act like a shell to protect the robot if it stumbles, and it can also be used as a shell that will help the robot roll upright if it falls over. And finally, if we'd like to move by rolling, perhaps if we want to go slower or more carefully, we can also use those same reaction wheels for rolling on the ground, as well as reorienting while we're in that flight phase.
Oh, that's really interesting. So, like, you know, people are probably very familiar with the reaction wheels as a method of using electricity to change the direction that your telescope is pointing. But in this case, you know, by running these reaction wheels, and I guess you can spin them back and forth depending on which of those, you know, pitch, yaw, whatever you're trying to change, you can change that with each one, and then also use them as wheels to actually drive around. That's really cool. Okay, so then. The last thing then is the power, which, you could use solar power at Saturn. I've heard it measured about 100 times the size of what you need at Earth. That, you know, Juno is 25 times as big of solar panels, out at Saturn. But I can't imagine you dragging around, you know, tens of meters of solar panels to get some electricity.
Yeah, that would be very challenging. The current plan for this LEAP project is to be paired with another sort of mothership lander. And there's already been published a concept for a mission called Enceladus Orbilander that would first orbit around Enceladus and then land on the surface, as the name implies, but doesn't have any mechanism for mobility once on the surface. If we did pair with some mission like that, then this could be sort of like a deployed rover, a smaller daughter mission that's coming off of this larger one. And so our solution for power would probably be onboard batteries. If we are able to go back and dock with the main lander, we might be able to draw some power off that for recharging. But because it's so hard to get sunlight so far from the sun, it wouldn't be very practical to try to mount solar panels on a robot that's intentionally small enough to be a payload on another main lander.
It seems kind of like Ingenuity as a partner to Perseverance. But in this case, instead of it being a helicopter, you've got this little jumper. But you know, even so, if, you know, solar panels are the issue, time, it can work in your favor eventually. That, you know, with Ingenuity, it had a very small solar panel on top of it, it just had to wait a long time between being able to charge. And so with Saturn, you just have to wait longer. But you would still, theoretically, I guess, collect energy eventually that you could use.
That might be possible. I would probably have to chat with some of my JPL colleagues who are much more familiar with all of these challenges when doing space missions. But there's also some challenges with things like cold. I'm not exactly sure how well we'll be able to keep the electronics and things warm during that time if we have to wait a really long time for solar panels to charge up. So there will be some additional time constraints as well.
Yeah. So what are the kinds of interesting features that the scientists have identified as questions that they have that this kind of a platform would be able to give some insight into?
Yeah. One of the really exciting things about Enceladus is the presence of a subsurface ocean. It's one of the few bodies in the solar system other than Earth that has this. And they'd really love to know more about what the chemicals are like in that subsurface ocean, and specifically how those are released through the cryovolcanism on the surface. Enceladus has this icy outer crust, but there are these geyser-like plumes that are being released from the surface and creating one of the rings of Saturn. So if we can go and capture the material that's coming out of these jets, we can tell something about what's in the ocean. Enceladus Orbilander already has a plan for collecting these, but it doesn't have a plan for collecting them right at the source by the jets. If we can go and measure quantities of the jets, things like how much material is being released, or maybe even, as a stretch goal, collect some of that material and bring it back for analysis, we can tell something more about the spatial distribution of things that are coming out of these jets, and differences between the jets themselves and how they work in different locations. And that's really what we want to do, be able to travel long distances over the surface to collect material or at least measurements from multiple different jets along the surface.
That sounds tricky. And I guess, I mean, you don't know what the conditions actually are. Is it a, you know, is it like a really steep cliff where there's water just blasting past you and you just have to stick some kind of sensor out into the flow? Or is it a really kind of more of a seepage across a wide area? Like, you know, I guess this is the, these are the questions that have to be answered.
Yeah. So some of that we hope to answer with a mission like LEAP, or, you know, we could if LEAP's feasible for this. We're not exactly sure what the parameters are like there, but there are going to be several challenges. One of them that you mentioned is the terrain features, what we're going to have to get over. So some of our investigations will be looking at, well, if we're given images from another imager as we're going over the surface, can we determine what the quantities of the surface are like? You know, how stiff it is, how slippery it is. Can we use that to plan a path for jumps to get over things that we couldn't jump on? For instance, not falling into cliffs and so on. And then get to where we can take measurements from the jets. As for measuring from the jets specifically, our plan is to actually jump the robot through the jet. The density is not that high, and so it's not likely that it's going to, you know, blast us into space or anything like that. And that will give us direct access to the jet as it's coming out before anything else happens to it, any weathering from space or the environment on Enceladus itself, because we'll be in the jet.
Oh, that's great. I like that. So there's, don't worry about trying to position yourself beside the jet to try and sample it. Just jump right through, see what you get as you come through the other side. So obviously this technology solves an exploration problem in these low gravity airless environments. And Enceladus is just one of them. But I mean, we saw the difficulties in landing the Philae lander in the Rosetta mission and any future asteroid missions. I know the Japanese are planning to go to Phobos in with their upcoming mission. So, you know, where are some applications in solar system exploration that you see this kind of hopping robot could play a job?
As you'd mentioned earlier, Ingenuity was this awesome new device that could be added to another larger mission in order to do scouting or travel further distances and add this additional locomotion mode. So we hope that by developing this type of jumping technology, we can assess the feasibility of making essentially jumping Ingenuity helicopter alternatives for places that don't have an atmosphere. So some of the smaller bodies you've mentioned that don't have an atmosphere but have a low amount of gravity might be a really good place for this type of jumping.
Yeah. What about the moon?
The moon is another one, that's true. The moon fits those criteria. It doesn't have an atmosphere and the gravity is lower. So we could also evaluate, is jumping on the moon a good solution?
And sunlight is stronger.
Yes, so that also makes it easier. We're closer to Earth, we've got more sunlight. There's a bunch of things that the moon has going for it.
Yeah. But cold. So what if it falls over?
Yeah, so that's one of the major things that Salto can't do. Salto can wall jump, it can bounce on its toe, it can stick a landing like a gymnast, it can go for 10 minutes of hopping continuously, but it can't get up if it falls over. And of course, you don't want a deal breaker to be, oh, my robot tipped over, if you're going to spend a lot of money getting your robot out to some other moon. So that's one of the reasons why we're considering these reaction wheels. If we can give it this large rounded shell, there are a couple ways we could make it balance upright. So one of them is, if you've seen those sort of weighted toys where you've got a big round surface with a weight at the bottom, it'll naturally right itself on a flat surface to come upright. But you also don't totally want to rely on those types of things if you might be stuck on a more complicated surface with ice and other features. So by spinning these wheels, we can also accelerate the robot in order to point the leg down and then balance again in order to go jump. So again, maybe we could say it's sort of killing three birds with one stone. We can protect the robot from collisions if it, you know, happens to stumble. We can help it get upright again, and we can give it the ability to orient itself in the lacking atmosphere flight phases.
So I'm kind of imagining a robot with sort of like two wheels. You know, I've seen the drawings, right? But two wheels that are sort of at a bit of an angle so it can... And then it has the leg kind of tucked underneath. And so whenever, if it ever falls, it gets itself back into that position. And then the leg is positioned to then kick off and away it goes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So could you scale this up? How big could you make one of these things?
That's a great question. So jumping scaling is something that I've thought a lot about. What size is the best size for a jumper? One of the challenges actually ends up being that if you make a jumping robot bigger, it doesn't actually usually jump much higher in terms of absolute terms. If you make a robot that can jump about 1 meter, and you know maybe it's 10 centimeters tall, and you make a robot that's a meter tall, it's still probably going to jump around the order of a meter. Just because you made it 10 times taller doesn't mean it's going to jump 10 times higher, or even the square root of 10 times higher. And part of the challenge here is the scaling of actuator power, and the scaling of mass. As things get bigger, they get heavier, usually related to sort of the cube of the length, since the weight is related to the volume. And this means that as you make your robot bigger and bigger, while you can carry more things, the benefit of the jumping gets smaller and smaller. For example, if I have a really big 10 meter tall robot, but I can only jump maybe a couple of meters high, there's not much reason to do that. I might as well just take a step if my legs are long enough, right? So small is really where jumping shines. And as a consequence, I think the sort of sweet spot for how big you want to build a robot for making these jumps, I mean, it kind of depends on what gravity situation you're in, but at least on Earth, the size scale of sort of about a foot and maybe a pound in size or so is kind of that sweet spot. You can get a little bigger than that. Of course, you can get a lot smaller than that, but too much bigger than that and the benefits of jumping start to fall away. On Enceladus, because the gravity is so low, jumping might be beneficial at larger sizes for longer. Even if I am 10 meters tall, but I can jump 100 meters high, like, oh, that's still worth it. So that, I think, might mean that you could make larger systems jump if they're on lower gravity. But there is a second part to this challenge with making bigger jumpers. And that is what some people call the Haldane problem. There's these sort of thought experiments of dropping increasingly large animals off of very high heights and how injured the animal becomes when it hits the ground. The bigger you get, the more fragile you are, generally. You know, if you drop a cockroach off of essentially any height, it's sort of indestructible because its terminal velocity in the Earth's atmosphere is so low, it just can't get hurt by how fast it falls. The bigger you make the robot, the more susceptible it's going to be to breaking when it hits something. So again, even though the gravity is lower on these other planetary bodies, the speed that you jump at is still the same. The speed that, you know, Salto or Leap would jump, we're planning on being relatively similar. The only difference is the deceleration is so much slower that that same velocity carries you much further. On the other hand, though, whatever speed the robot hits the ground with on Earth is the speed it's going to have to hit the ground on Enceladus with. And if it's not able to take that impact and it's going to get damaged, that's still going to be a problem. So again, for that reason, much bigger than a few pounds in size starts to get a little challenging because, you know, imagine dropping something from 4 feet high on Earth. That's the same type of impact it's going to feel if it jumps with the same energy on another body as well.
So then the opposite question, how small could you go?
The size scale, I think, is great for all the jumping things I've mentioned. Your relative jump gets a lot bigger. Your robustness to impacts get a lot bigger. But of course, the major downside to getting smaller is I can't carry as much stuff. My payload gets smaller and smaller. So one of the other things we're investigating with the Leap project is also what should we be carrying? What types of sensors will be most useful? What types of processing and planning are we going to need to do to get over Enceladus to carry out these scientific measurement missions?
Right, right. And I mean, that idea of being able to actually measure those plumes in situ with devices that are on the Leaper itself would be a really good target to try and hit. And those things aren't necessarily that light. Dragging along a mass spectrometer or some kind of gas.
So we're probably not going to carry out the big guns on the little robot, but, you know, simpler things that will be able to get, you know, mass flow rate or small cameras and things, definitely possible.
Yeah, yeah, that's really interesting. So, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is a NASA NIAC grant, and this is a phase one, so these are very exploratory. What are you hoping to deliver with the end of this initial phase one?
The work that we're doing is largely looking at what types of things are we not sure about being feasible on Enceladus, and how can we be more sure about that through either theoretical studies or experiments. So I've already talked a lot about the reaction wheels. We'll also be looking at things like what types of feet are we going to need to use if we're going to be jumping on icy particles. We'll do some testing at JPL with simulants of granular materials to see kind of how this might behave. We'll be looking at theoretical studies for how accurately we can jump, and what types of sensor packages might be required and might be feasible on this type of platform. Through this study of a bunch of different of these subcomponents, attitude control, jumping interaction with the ground, sensors, processing, and so on, we can figure out, you know, do we have the technology now? What types of things do we have to do next in order to make this a real feasible project?
That's interesting. I could see, that if it's very sandy or slippery, then that totally changes the, you know, how much power you can expect to get from each leap.
Exactly.
And you have to change the, you know, some kind of claw or crampons or something, which is different. Yeah. And yeah.
So if you take a look at our illustration, kind of artist's conception that I drew, indeed, we did put some little crampons on the bottom for that reason.
Right, right, right. But then the question is, how well do crampons work in ice that is 200 degrees below freezing, that is as hard as rock. So as hard as granite. But it all sounds great though. And you know, that's kind of half the fun of it. So Justin, what are you obsessed with right now?
I'm really obsessed with robots that move in weird ways. The name of the laboratory that I founded here just a couple years ago is the Novel Mobile Robots Lab. And we're excited about looking at ways that robots aren't moving right now, but might give us these unique ways to get around in situations that other robots would have trouble with. So jumping, of course, is one that's very close to my heart. I worked on it all through my PhD, and I've got students continuing this through things like the Leap Project. I'm also looking at if we can get robots to walk or run faster, better, over rougher terrain, and wiggle or roll or slide in other ways too, including combinations of these, jumping and climbing, jumping and perching, jumping and rolling as Leap does, and so on.
I've got a video, like a half-written video at some point on that exact topic. So I kind of want to at some point plumb your experience with this. That, you know, I've seen NASA has tested out rovers that go on the underside of ice that roll around upside down on ice. I've seen snake bots and, you know, and interesting ideas as well. So, you know, are there some kinds of locomotion that maybe people, I mean, I don't think people would have thought about this sort of one-legged hopping idea, but are there other forms of locomotion that you think would have real value to solving some problems that currently would allow planetary scientists to get to places they really want to check out?
Yeah. Okay. So I think there are a few answers to that. First, you know, we can combine locomotion in different ways. There's been some fun recent paper in Science Robotics about a combined flying hopping robot that gets the benefits of being able to fly like a drone, but then improved efficiency actually out of bouncing, increased agility, and ability to change directions by using this bouncing leg. So I think combinations of these different types of locomotion modes is really fun. I feel fortunate living in this day and age when people have explored lots of little pieces of these sort of locomotion concepts, and seeing what other in-between spaces we can fit in or ways we can combine stuff, I think is really fun. And actually, on that topic, it turns out that one-legged hopping, while it seems super weird nowadays, was actually thought of a long time ago. Boston Dynamics founder, Mark Raybert, back in 1984, actually made some of the first balancing one-legged jumping robots.
I've seen them.
Yeah. So I think it's fun to see You know, when we have these ideas, there's a bunch of things that we can add onto it in order to make them work better. Those initial hoppers were always working in the lab, and they had these big lines connected to offboard power supplies. So a lot of the work we were looking at is as we make these systems smaller, as the acceleration gets higher, as we get unconnected from ground stations, what types of new maneuvers can we make, and new robustness and abilities we can get out of it. So I'm excited about all those things.
I mean, I think about like when you're playing video games and you've got some capability, you jump in the air and somehow, I'm not sure, you can change your motion while you're in the air. Like you think about like Super Mario or whatever, right? And so if you had this combo of a hopper with some kind of propeller, then it could hop and then analyze its surroundings and then go, oh, wait a minute, that's a bad landing place. Let me change where I'm going to land a little bit. And you can kind of see. And I wonder if, like, for example, does hopping use less power to get you off the surface than running the propellers as a way to kind of decrease the energy use for your liftoff?
Yeah, so those are great questions. I think we'll have to do some analysis for specifically what environment you're in, for which one is more energy efficient for launch. I think the jumping is probably more efficient. In fact, there was another paper that recently came out, a Raven robot from EPFL that was combining bird-like legs with bird-like wings and a propeller, so maybe not so bird-like, but did show that you can get a more reliable launch and less energy use by using those jumps to get you up into the air at the beginning for launching something that's more like a fixed-wing plane. So each of these locomotion modes has their benefits. That energy efficiency also extends for essentially what you'd call endurance or flight time. If you're bouncing, the nice thing is that you don't have to be applying full thrust to keep yourself in the air all the time. You can allow yourself to decelerate and come back down because when you hit the ground, the leg will catch you. And then if you have a springy leg, it'll give you back some of that energy on your bounce. And so you can run for a longer time if you're bouncing. However, the benefit to flying is it's way faster. Jumping can't usually match the speed of a quadrotor drone, you know, flying full out. And so even though the energy draw is higher, the power draw is higher, the speed is so high that the overall energy to travel a distance might not be so bad. And so if you want to fly really far, maybe you use the propellers. But if you want to stay somewhere and like move around a little bit, but do it for a long time, jumping might be better. And by combining these different modes, jumping, rolling, flying, climbing, and so on, you can get the best of each of these to make systems that can do things that other ones wouldn't be able to do.
And you mentioned as well, like walking, legs. And, you know, up until this point, right, rovers rove. They don't walk. But there are these terrains, you know, Curiosity or Perseverance will spend the better part of a week carefully looking at a slope, a sandy slope, and deciding whether or not it wants to go, you know, any closer to that slope. But in theory, you know, being able to walk gets you through really complicated terrain. What do you sort of envision a walking robot might look like for exploring more dangerous, hazardous terrain?
Sure. So I think that there's a bunch of really exciting legged robots out there. In fact, you can buy them now from a variety of different companies. Bipeds, humanoids, quadrupeds, hexapods, right? I think one of the challenges that legged robots face right now is when compared to the traditional flying robots, rolling robots. While legged robots can do fancy stuff to get over terrain, they can climb stairs, they can jump, they can even dance, they're not very good in terms of the standard metrics by which we usually evaluate vehicles. Payload capacity, range, endurance, and so on. And in particular, if legged robots have to do things like spend a lot of energy just holding their legs in place so they can stand, that's very different from a rolling robot that just turns the actuators off and sits there, in park, essentially, for as long as it wants to, without energy draw. So building legged robots that can still retain the useful abilities of legs, being able to step very carefully to choose where you put your feet and get over rough terrain, with the ability to be more efficient, to last longer, to move faster maybe, like the rolling robots, I think that'd be great. I guess another one is speed too, right? Legged robots aren't able to move as fast as cars, or even really humans most of the time. So all those things, speed, payload capacity, endurance, that's stuff that I think will be really important in order to get robots that will be applicable for things like space missions, where you have to be safe and run for a really long time.
Oh, well, when do we get our mecha, I guess is the big question. Never?
Mecha? For humans, you mean? Like the ones that you can ride in?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I will say, coming from the land of analyzing scaling for things like jumping, one of the challenges with mecha is the bigger you get, the more fragile you get. And so a big challenge with making those types of robots is making sure that either You never crash into anything, so you're really, really careful, or you somehow protect yourself enough that if you fall over, it's going to be okay. So for that reason, I think mecha are still going to be a little bit challenging to do. But hey, maybe if we can figure out those material strength things, we could do it.
Although they would still probably adapt nicely into a car as well. So I was, you know, people are always excited about like the future and that we'll get these giant robots walking around with people piloting them. And just, I don't know, it just doesn't make sense compared to a tractor.
Yeah, though, I mean, if you think about things like tractors that have legs, people used oxen and horses for a good long time. So,
yeah. Hey,
if you're okay with changing the shape just a little bit, right, there might be some place for legged robots at that sort of tractor horse kind of scale.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Justin, I'm really looking forward to seeing hopping robots on other worlds. So please continue.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. Let's see if we can make it happen.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Justin Yim. I'll have some more thoughts, but first, I'd like to thank our patrons. Thanks to Abe Kingston, Barry Lee Griffing, David Giltonet, David Matz, Dustin Cable, Greg Feely, Hudson Ward, James Clark, Jeremy Madden, Jim Burke, Jordan Young, Josh Schultz, Michael Purcell, Paul Robach, Sean Sargent, Spiderswap.io, Stephen Feather-Munley, Thomas Hill Squadron, and Vlad Shiblin, who support us at the Master of the Universe level. And all our patrons, all your support means the universe to us. Obviously, this is an extremely exciting idea, and I love the thought that one day we could see hopping robots bouncing around on the surface of Enceladus. Now, if you're intrigued by this idea, this video is part of our NASA NIAC 2025 Phase 1 Awards series. So far, we've interviewed, I think, 10 people out of the 15 that have been awarded. And so we've got a playlist. You can go and check out all of these interviews and think about what the future of space exploration might be. All right, we'll see you next time.